Hi, the Black Talk Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
The views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Welcome to another episode of Real Life on Foundation Radio Network in conjunction with Black Talk Radio Network. Thank you, Brother Scotty, for hosting us. And before we get started, we would like to start off with the preliminaries. If you find anything on this network, Black Talk Radio Network, whether we're talking about Tando, Blacks in Business, the Dunn Twins, I believe that's their name. That's a dope show too. If you have not checked that podcast out, by all means, go check that out. BTR News, Time for Awakening. Man, there's so many. I'm having a brain fart about that. But if you find any of those constructive, please give some of your financial energy to BTR, to the BTR community. Excuse me, not the BTR community. My apologies. But to Black Talk Radio Network. And you can just go on to Black Talk Radio Network and there's a donate button and anything and everything is appreciate it. So with that being said, let's move right into the show. Brother Roz, are you there?
Yes, I am. I'm up here trying to get to all of the articles. My system is moving a little slow. So I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, we can.
All right.
Beautiful day. Wet and stormy in some parts of the country. For everybody that was out there, happy Mother's Day to you or to your mother, you know, the person that brought you to life in this world. Most definitely have to appreciate them. And if you don't, you know, that's kind of something you have to deal with. So we want to spread that once again. I normally don't celebrate the holidays, but that's one that I always pay attention to. So once again, happy Mother's Day to all of the mothers that are out there. Hopefully you are tuning in and you find what we have tonight constructive. Tonight's show, I have mine's pulled up if you don't, but drones and how we can use them for black liberation. We have a few more topics that we would like to get into, but that's what we're going to start with. So before we get into anything, Brother Rise, if you have your side ready, we can go over some of these articles before we get deep off into the drones, because that's just going to be very brief, and then we're going to get directly into the rest of the show.
Okie dokie. Still waiting for this thing to pull up, so if you want to jump into anything, you can do that right now.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's, you just let me know some of the ones that you wanted to brush over real quick. One of the most recent that was put up was by you, and it comes from sciencemag.org. Rare African plant signals diamond beneath the soil. I didn't go over that article, but that is very, very interesting that they could just see the different formation of the plants to tell that there's something foreign in the soil. I think that's awesome.
Only under certain conditions, and the conditions which the plant grows, the roots are penetrate into areas in which the pressure was high enough to create diamonds. So they know when they see that plant, that soil underneath is going to be soil that's fertile with diamonds. So that's basically nature, just paying attention to nature. I'm pretty sure that's probably some sort of indigenous knowledge, but paying attention to nature, they were able to discern that this plant only grows where we find massive amounts of diamonds. So they're using that. Remember I put up the article like maybe 2-3 weeks ago where they found a way of using either radio waves or microwaves to go to any part of the world and basically scan the earth, and by doing so they can find everywhere that there are mineral deposits in that land. And they said the first continent they're going to do that with is the African continent, which means that there will be no place on the continent that's mineral rich that they'll be able to hide from the colonizers' technology to find it, which means that they'll know exactly where to go to cause any problems to get rid of the indigenous people to, you know, take what they want. So yeah, this plant kind of was the beginning stages, but they already got it to the point where just about any sort of mineral wealth in the soil, they can find it on any continent by the proper scanning through that article that I posted a couple weeks back.
Yes, and you could read more about this article in real life, the BTR community page. You'll check that out. Let's get on through a few more of these articles. And I thought this one was very interesting, so I posted this, and it comes from express.co.uk, News and Science. Is the 140,000-year-old Baltic Sea anomaly a crashed UFO 300 feet down on the seabed? Now, the reason I put this up, it goes into a little bit more of what we're going to talk about later on tonight, but they found this 300 feet down on the seabed by looking at sonar technology. We're going to get very, very deep into, we're not going to get very deep into sonar technology. We're going to discuss it and what it's used for, and for some of the claims that's being made. This is one of the tools that could prove for or not these particular conversations. So, again, this comes from express.co.uk. Is a 140,000-year-old Baltic Sea anomaly a crashed UFO? So that article is very interesting. People who've gotten close to it, professional divers, all of their electronics stopped. And once they got like 200 feet away from it, they stuff started working again. So, you know, that's just one of those things. Here's another one. Brother Rise posted about the Olmec calendar, a video that I believe, I'm not sure if you want to see one of those or not. Another one comes from Science News for Students. .org explainer, what are LIDAR radar and sonar, you know, and that just tells what type of technology that is and what they're used for. Go ahead, Brother Ross.
Oh, no, no, no. I'm listening to you. I'm actually trying to put the videos in the thread while, you know, while you're doing your thing.
Okay, okay. Here's another video. Once again, it goes into the sonar and the oceanography. And this comes from slasher.net. Intro to oceanography. And y'all, please, please, with all of the information that's being shared nowadays, you need to know how this stuff works, because it's an intricate tool for you to filter out the horse manure, you know. Continuing on, this comes from raceandhistory.com. Black civilizations of ancient America. And we're going to get into this particular article a little bit more deeper. Brother Rise also put in another video on the Omics. I know we are speaking about the Omics quite frequently right now tonight, but there is a reason. Reason being is because a lot of people like to point to the Omics, showing how old this society or this civilization is. And tonight we're going to discuss the African origins of the Omics. Continuing on, Brother Rise, have you pulled up? Because I think you'll be better, have a better explanation for some of these articles that you put up. I'm going to just run through some of these that I put up. So while you're getting that together.
All right, let me go through.
Let me just get through some of these. 10 ways to use a drone. And this comes from the Smithsonian mag.com. And we're here shortly after we get done with these articles of the day, we're going to go into some of these drones. Here's another one that I found on dealnews.com. 10 awesome things to do with a drone. And when we're talking about drones, we're not only talking about the helicopters per se. We're talking about RC cars. We're also talking about boats, the little RC boats. All of these things are military uses. They have military uses, excuse me. And we have to become efficient with them, because these are the tools that we have at hand. Don't cost very much money, but could save your life, your time, and your credibility. So these are things that we're going to get into this very, very soon. Continuing on, another one of the articles that I had put up that I wanted to discuss. Excuse me, for whatever reason, my internet is acting a little slow today. Actually, Brother Rise, I think that is all the ones that I wanted to discuss.
Okay, no
if
problem.
If you will, we can get into some of these that you put up.
Sure. There was one that came from the New York Post that was quite disturbingly interesting. It says, a woman accused of serving lover's remains at a barbecue. Indiana woman, this is a white female, Kelly M. Cochran, who injected her husband with a lethal dose of heroin before smothering him with a pillow, may be responsible for 9 other deaths and is suspected of serving her lover's remains to unsuspecting neighbors at a barbecue. Now, that reminds me of, there's a play that's really well known that's been on Broadway for a long time called Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber. And it's about this barber, the movie stars Johnny Depp, but it's about this barber who, or this guy who basically has this powerful political figure who's in love with his daughter and basically destroys him, makes him have to flee England in order to, like, basically flee for his life. He frames him, and then he takes up with the man's daughter and kidnaps her and puts her in, like, this like, tower type of a building where he has her cordoned off from everybody, and he controls her very existence, and her father, the guy who he framed and put through all of that terrorism, comes back, and he portrays this barber named Sweeney Todd, and he gets a reputation for being the best barber in that particular part of England. But what he does is everybody associated with what happened to him, he murders them, he throws their body in the basement, he has this this grinder that grinds them up into ground beef, and then he starts making meat pies. And he starts distributing meat pies with human remains, but don't tell everybody that that's what they are. And then eventually he's exposed and he dies at the end. But that's a really well-known play in New York City. Matter of fact, Gus on the Cows did a show about that particular play, and discussing the history of just cannibalism and just severe, horrific abuse of the human body in white culture. And this story kind of reminded me of that, because she went to a barbecue and served her husband, who she murdered, to her neighbors at a barbecue. So it just kind of stood out as far as the type of stuff you might come across with some of these folks, and they might look like their normal neighbor, but you know, they're into that sort of stuff. So just be wary, because this is also stuff that we need to teach our children too, just in regards to helping them understand, you know, the type of things that they'll be facing and dealing with in the system. Another article is from Popular Mechanics. It says, how the feds will use DNA to track legal weed. Pot may be legal in Colorado, but that doesn't mean the state has no illegal pot. Legal growers have illegally sold cannabis across state lines, and the legal growers can forge a paper trail to enter the legal market. So basically what it is there's a special type of spray that they can spray on the plant that they claim does not change the DNA of the plant at all, but those molecules bond to the DNA and create like a pattern, almost like a SKU number, or like almost like a scannable ID that will show up if they do a DNA test to show where that plant came from, its DNA lineage, and what grower grew that plant, because it's supposed to be legal weed. So anything that they can't get that DNA signature from will be considered illegal. So that's pretty much what it is. So there we go. This is the next level of where technology is taking things. So I guess they'll also do that for cocaine. I remember when I worked in the medical billing industry many years ago, I had seen a bill for a young white child where they gave him cocaine. He was like 11 years old. And I asked my boss, I said, they actually give children cocaine? And she said, yes, in certain medical situations, it is used for medical purposes. And I just stood there kind of flabbergasted, because this was like in the late 90s. So we're talking about the tail end of the crack era. And I was like, wow, okay. So, you know, you can, I guess, give them cocaine. And this was like an 11-year-old child. And I was like, okay, you know. And it was, I just asked the question because I was just shocked when I saw it. So I guess this, like I said, they might end up having a way of DNA trailing medical, quote unquote, cocaine as well. We'll see how this plays out down the road. What else do we have?
Medical cocaine,
man. And going to children at that. It wasn't, you know, something for an adult. Like I said, the child was 11. So it's quite telling, to say the least. I don't know if you wanted to do the because I put the video in for the for Dr. Degree and Dr. Umar. Did you want to go over that, or did you?
Well, let's get into these drone uses first.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do that. You have everything that you need.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Go ahead.
But before I do that, I just want to address this over here with Brother Otis had put something in the comments, and this AFRICOM, I hadn't seen that, but I did see the 12 African countries that were that attended the new embassy in Israel.
Yeah, they were following the U.S. example from what I saw.
Right, and as I was looking through an article on this AFRICOM, I'm saying it's detailing these same people. Well, not all of them, but some of these 12 countries that are working with America, and I'm not sure if that's a art of war tactic or what, because it seems just asinine for them to be working with somebody who has constantly tortured them. But we also have to remember that they have been constantly they was put in there for the most part, not all of them, but there was and always is some help coming from the U.S. with these regime changes. So it just tickled my brain a little bit. So, but going back to the 10 ways to use drones, this comes from the Smithsonian.com. My apologies. I couldn't even get that out. And I just want to go over these 10 different ways to use drones stated by them in one of these other articles real quick. They say that they're using it as medicine from the sky. They're dropping off prescriptions to people via drones. Now gather that in your mind for a brief second. They're dropping off prescriptions. And there are many uses for drones. This would not have been one of them that I would have thought of. But after I read all of these, I say it's about 20, I believe. And then we'll get into the actual activity that we can use drones for. I think it's important to look at what they're doing first, because they are the teachers. You know, they are the ones that are using it, have first access, and just to see what they're doing and how we can manipulate that to help for us. Number two is fighting fire with fire. What they're doing is they're using drones. They're flying drones in that can set fires for those raging forest fires out in California. They start burning off a particular section so the fire has no more fuel to take, because they've already set a fire to cut a hole in how far they can go. Number three, it's tracking Zika mosquitoes.
Oh yeah,
they tracking mosquitoes with drones. Another one, number four, is aircraft checking aircraft. They are using drones to fuel and also provide broadband with drones. And that's number five, spreading broadband. So they have these drones following these airplanes to produce Wi-Fi for the people on the plane. Number six is bringing back memories, and I thought this was pretty good. So let me just read this. A small Ohio company is using drones to bring a little happiness and pleasant memories to people near the end of their lives. Anthropology. I'm not gonna mess with that no more. Anthropology works with families of hospice patients to identify a favorite place from their past. Then they send up a drone to shoot aerial video of that cherished spot. This video is streamed on YouTube and watched in real time by the patients in their bed. So I thought that was pretty cool. That's the last thing I thought that they would be using it for, but you know, just to let the public know, it always have to sound nice. Number seven is tennis practice. They have these drones that are dropping tennis balls in particular areas so you can be better at contacting the ball depending on how it comes down. Mm-hmm. Now, what I see that doing is dropping bombs. Exactly. On people. You know, you have to have a creative mind, and considering the lifestyle that I have lived throughout my time, when I hear these type of things, I see something different than most. And that's exactly what they dropping tennis balls as a safe way to let you know that you could drop a bomb with a drone. Number eight, whale watching. They are flying drones over the ocean to spy on what whales are doing. You know, they come up with all kind of ways, man, and it's
You know, I saw a
it's
documentary
quite
where they used
hilarious
the drone.
To hear them.
See I'm again? Sorry. I'm sorry for interjecting. I was saying I saw a documentary, a nature documentary, where they used a drone to take skin samples from whales as they were breaching to breathe, breaching the surface to breathe. That little split second that they take to breathe and dive again, the drone would just cut a snippet of the skin off of the, either the back of the whale or its dorsal fin, and then they would be able to use it for DNA testing to see which pod the whale was from, whether it's a whale that they had contact with before, the health of the animal, the age of the animal, everything. So yeah, the drones and whale watching is way more than just whale watching. They're actually doing scientific DNA testing using drones on whales as well.
Right. Now, who's to say that they don't have, because we already know that they have drones that look like little small flies. So how are you to know that you're not being snipped and you thinking that an insect is maybe biting you? You know, All of these things run through my mind. But back to the article, number 9, spotting landmines. And I definitely have to use this because that is a tactic that we could use, not necessarily looking for landmines, but just knowing the terrain that you're living around by way of running a drone or RC car or an underwater drone to where you have a boat or maybe a boat that can be submerged.
Yeah, submarine or something like
every
that.
Day, more than 70 people are killed or injured by landmines. Researchers estimate that removing all landmines around the world would take more than 1,000 years and cost more than $30 billion. But now British scientists have been able to fit drones with special imaging technology. Repeat that one more time. Fit drones with special imaging technology that allows them to spot anomalies in plants caused by chemicals leaking from unexploded mines. Yo, same thing. There's always a cover-up. Think about just a couple weeks ago, they had a protest. And the police were arresting the protesters because they had masks on. Yes, they have cameras all up on the buildings and what have you. But we also know that police... I can't remember what the brother's name was, but they drove a RC car with bombs and blowed him up. Are we under the illusion that they're not flying drones for facial recognition, taking pictures of the crowd? I mean, outside of that, why else would they be arresting only the people who had their face covered? But we will get into that here in a little bit. This last one, number 10, was painting murals. They have drones that can paint murals. So some of those were useful, some of them wasn't, but these are the top 10 ways that they deem drones to be used. Now I want to go into this last 10, and this comes from dealnews.com. And 10 awesome things you can do with a drone. Now, y'all, I think y'all will appreciate this one maybe a little more. I did myself. And it starts off with aerial videography, meaning that you could go and you could make a video of anything, whether we're talking about fireworks or just being doing reconnaissance, to where you can just see what everybody else is doing with this quiet drone that you have. Nobody knows you're there, but you know where all of the places that you may need to get to, with where they are and how to get to them. Number 2 would be action cam drone. Same thing, you just aerial video of what's going on. Number 3 was drone selfies, which is not important for some, maybe for us and what we're talking about, not so much. Look over your property. Now, this is one of the more special reasons to have a drone. If you have quite a big sum of land, instead of going out and riding out and making noise, if somebody is out there, you have this drone that you could fly around, not be noticed, and see what other people are doing in and around your property. I think that's a very, very special technique that we need to use. Whether we talking about, you know, some people gonna do things like spy on other people in their homes and what have you, but just to be able to see what's going on in your home without actually physically being there could save your life in the upcoming events that we believe are about to happen. The next one would be join or start a drone club. I'm not sure about that, but what you can do is if you did do that, you will find people who have particular skills with these drones that they could teach you, and you could adapt that to your counter-racist logic. The next one will be make 3D maps. I think that's very important because I myself have said on many of occasions that when the stuff hit the fan, it's certain things that we need to know where they are, how to get to them the fastest, and what kind of obstacles we're going to be facing once we make it to that particular destination. So 3D model maps are paramount to what we're talking about tonight. Engage in amphibious operations, and this goes to the underwater drones and also the boats. Me living in a city where the river is a very intricate part of the city, these are particular these waterways are highways. If you have a canoe, a john boat, or what have you, you can maneuver around in a type of way that most people can't. But before you get out there, especially in times of the rest, you need to know what you're getting out there into. Depending on where you stay, you may have still water or you may have rushing rivers. Regardless, you do not want to be caught out in the middle of the water and you're not prepared. In these boat RC drones are one way that you could pay attention to these waterways and figure out how you're going to maneuver through that. And these last two are not important, but I would say them anyway. Start your own drone business and synchronize drone dancing. Not two that I really cared about, but engaging in amphibious operations, making 3D maps or 3D models, looking over your property, and aerial video, those I feel are the most important simply because they will save your life. You may or may not be able to get another drone, but if you out there trying to do this physically, you may or may not make it back home. So that's why I wanted to go over that as far as the drones. When we talking about the RC cars, you know, you could get you a GoPro, and I'm sure that some of these cars have cameras attached to them already, the way that this drone movement has been booming as of late. So this is another way that if you live on rough terrain, you have a lot of hills, mountains, these are things that you could get a bird's eye view of what's going on without having somebody spot your actual drone in the air and taking that out of the air. So these are things that we think of as children's toys, but they have military applications that I think all of us need to take a small bit of our time and learn how to maneuver these. Brother Rise, what you think?
Oh yeah, I think technology. We've talked about that before in Tando. That you know, for the vast majority of people, technology may not always be the best thing, but we should always have people who are willing to learn and take the risk to learn about these things, because there's different counter racist properties that these technologies have. I mean, even when you look at the revolution in Tunisia and in Egypt, it was really like Facebook and I forget the other social media site, but they were using it to coordinate where they would meet up in order to facilitate their protests. And they were able to even move important people based on other people reporting where the authorities were live during the event. So, you know, that's why they took those things down. You notice in a lot of those Middle Eastern countries, or even in Europe, certain parts of Europe, and definitely in Asia, they'll take Facebook offline immediately, because they know that these things can be used in that way, and people are using them in that way. So yeah, I think that it's something that we should always know about and think about. Even when I posted quite a few articles on people using drones to deliver drugs and cell phones to prison, they'll just fly the drone over the fence, and you know, a couple times the drone crashed or something like that, and they actually, you know, found the drone. But ultimately, they were using the drone to deliver drugs for different prisoners to sell, and cell phones so they could communicate with the outside world. So, you know, it's all different. Oops, dropped almost on my computer. All different types of ways that you can utilize this technology for our benefit. Once you have the right context and the right focus as far as where you're putting that time and energy, and I think that that's a must.
I agree wholeheartedly. There was another article that I didn't mention that and this is Living While Black, and the author's name is Leron Barton. I say Leron, but Leron Barton. And this article is dope. If you have not seen this article, I will put this article in the thread on the side. It's definitely a must read. I'm gonna go through some of the ones that I thought was better. Let me just go on, and I'm gonna jump down a couple paragraphs, and I'm gonna start right here. If I were to try and describe my life as an African American, it would be the navigation of different circumstances that could cost you freedom, standing, family, and life. You try and maintain a sliver of sanity while dealing with the everyday horrors of racism, white supremacy, past, present, and future. Think of a high wire act at the circus. You marvel at the person's ability to maintain balance while each step is more dangerous than the other. We cheer at the man or woman who is able to concentrate as they walk on a wire that is not designed to hold anyone up. If they misstep or lose their balance, they fall to the net and the crowd groans in disappointment. Only in the shoes of an African American, there is no safety net. Just a free fall to death. Being black is all about avoiding the inevitable free fall for as long as you can. No piece of art in recent memory embodies the high wire act better than Danny Glover's This Is America. Glover's mental dive is a provocative mindfuck of a video that captures black people's attempts to keep the music, singing, dancing, and smiling going on while the carnage slowly engulfs us all. As I watched the clip, I thought, we just want to block out the shit around us as much as we can. Again, African Americans walking on a tightrope are trying to never let them see us sweat. But at the end, we all fall off. And I'm gonna just leave it right there. Forgive my language. This is what was in the article. If you have not read this article, Man, this is a very, very sweet article to read. I think it's very enlightening for us that don't know what the experience is that we are experiencing. And I say those of us who don't know, because I have asked a few black people, and for whatever reason, they are oblivious to all of this that's going on. So it is a few that are out there. But if you didn't know, after reading this article, there's so many different examples that will show you exactly what's going on in a very uncodified manner. And I think it's the perfect thing to couple with that video that he spoke of, This Is America. What was you saying, Brother Roz?
Oh, nothing. I was just listening.
Oh, okay. I thought I heard you say something. But with that being said, you want to get into the real quick before we even go any further. Okay, break is at the top of the hour. You want to get into those videos that you want to speak of, Brother Scotty? Are you there?
Okay. Yeah, I'm here.
Well, let me see if I can.
Oh, he's there.
Okay, you there? Which one? It was video one, is it not, Brother Ross?
Yeah, video one is that we should start with, and then number two. And they're all short, like I think like 3 minutes or less. I think the first one's 3 minutes or less. The second one is like a minute and change, and the third one I think is maybe 5 minutes or something, somewhere in that range.
Come up to modern times, I'd like to get back to the slavery period. And in your book, you talk about you document specific examples of some of the doctors who were involved in these ghoulish experiments. So you mentioned Dr. James Marion Sims and Dr. Walter F. Jones. Can you talk about some of the things that they practiced on slaves in those days?
Right. James Marion Sims was a very important surgeon from Alabama, and all of his medical experimentation took place with slaves. He took the skulls of young children, young black children, only black children, and he opened their heads and moved around the bones of the skull to see what would happen. Posited as a cure for disease, but there was no rationale for that. He also decided to remove the jawbone of a slave, but this slave was pretty intractable. He did not want the surgery. He loudly protested against it, and in response, Dr. Sims had him tied to a barber's chair and held immobile while he operated on him without anesthesia. But he's most infamous for his experiments, reproductive experiments with black women. He bought and otherwise acquired a group of black women who he housed in a laboratory, and over the period of 5 years and approximately 40 surgeries on one slave alone, he sought to cure a devastating complication of childbirth called vesicovaginal fistula. This cure entailed repeatedly doing incisions on their genitalia, very painful and, you know, very emotionally difficult, as you can imagine. And in the end, he claims to have cured one of them. And after this, he went north, where his medical fortune was made. He became the toast of Second Empire Paris when he went there to be the personal physician of Princess Eugenie. And when he returned to New York, he was elected the president of the American Medical Association. I think this is really important because although often you speak of surgeons and doctors who do non-consensual experimentation, and we think of these Frankensteinian characters, but the reality is these have tended to be overachieving adepts who were stellar physicians. They were well revered, well respected within the profession in their time, and only people only knew of their work through their own bolderized versions of it. They wrote up these accounts in medical journals, but they never characterized them as abusive experimentation because it was accepted for them that you operated on slaves who couldn't say no.
Talk about the Tuskegee experiment, though you write about how it obscures all others. A lot of people don't even know about Tuskegee.
That's true. Tuskegee is the icon of abusive experimentation of black people, but it's true. Many people still don't know what happened. And there are a lot of misconceptions floating about as well, so that's a really good question to me.
What happened was that about 400 black men in Macon County, Alabama, with syphilis, who had been diagnosed with syphilis at least, were studied over a period of 40 years by the United States Public Health Service.
That's the end
for
of
those
that
of you who, yes, for those of you who don't know that, a lot of those experiments are recorded in the book Medical Apartheid. I sent man to my mama because I had been telling her about some of these experiments, and she has never heard about this, and I found out that it's a lot of us who've never heard about this. So these are some of the atrocities that we had to deal with, and strangely enough, no, excuse me, let me retract that. It's not strange, but still, weirdly enough, a lot of us don't know about these experiments. Most people didn't know about Sandra Barton until the movie came out. That was also surprising to me. But we've constantly had to endure these type of experiments, and you wonder why we don't trust the doctors. I know you had a little bit more to say again.
No, I'm saying it gets deeper because that second video is a doozy. But again, it deals with black children and something that was done to black children, and this man, this, he has to be in his 80s, maybe late 70s, is a survivor. I think he might be the only survivor of this medical experimentation, and he's been walking around with a hole in his head his whole life, created by radiation. You know, and it's quite disturbing, but it just goes to show again, it's what they do to black children. They'll, you know, a child is a guinea pig, less than human, you know. They can do what they want with reckless abandon, and, you know, we're just, you know, we're not human to them. So for them, it's not a big deal. And that's kind of what she was even talking about with J. Marion Sims, and even with the Tuskegee experiment. Like, they would watch the black males infect their wives, the wives who didn't know that they had it, and then the children would end up infected, and they would just watch the whole family die and just catalog their slow demise. If you know about Al Capone, that's what killed Al Capone. He died from syphilis. And at the end of his life, he ended up losing his mind. He lost his memory. Like, there was some sort of syphilis-induced dementia he went through. So, I mean, like, the government watched these 400 families go through that for 40 years until each one just died off one by one. So that should just tell
you. Yeah, they started trying to cut it off, though, because some of those men were spreading it to some of their folks, and that's when it started getting locked down. But we had Brother Otis, you wanted to add something to the conversation?
Oh yeah, good evening. I was just going to touch on what you were saying. The bad part about it is, you know, the socialization during that period, and people leaving and having extramarital affairs, they only knew about the nucleus of 400, but they didn't track the contagions spread across this country. I mean, you know, people migrated north and everything. So the truth is, the government knew exactly what they were doing, but because most of the black communities were isolated, they even could track when several people had gone to a specific area because they knew the strain of the syphilis. So this is how cruel this country is, just definitely. Not just I have to put it this way. It's not the personal prejudice that's killing us. It's the systemic backing of government that is causing us. And a lot of our people that keep saying we won't do anything together, they don't understand. There's a systemic government progression to stop us. That's one of the reasons I get upset when we talk about the CDC. We got people that have been up there representing us for 30, 40 years. And they've done nothing to advance us. And they sit on these committees and they know exactly what's going on. But they get paid. It's like the they take their little biscuits, like Scotty says, and then move on and play dumb. And that is our biggest failure, because we don't have people that are sitting on the inside alarming us and letting us know what's going on with these public programs.
You're correct about that.
Yeah. Thank you, brother Otis. You are exactly correct, and that's what I was speaking of about them putting when they finally did put the crack down. It's because those extramarital affairs that you were just talking about.
Good night, son.
Well, give me a brief second, brother Ross. Go ahead.
Sure. Oh no, I was just saying that. I think Brother Otis kind of hit it on the head as far as just the cruelty and the sub-animal behavior that this government propagates. And you could just see it. What happens at the top is what is dictated and what happens at the bottom. Because you find that a lot of the white folks at the very bottom are just as heinous in their behavior, like the lady who killed her husband and served him up at the barbecue, as the people at the top. It's just that, like Otis said, they have that systemic control and domination. So a lot of the times they're able to get away with this stuff, and nothing's ever done legally or to even help the families that are affected by these things. It's just another tragic story about another group of black people, and it just tends to remain that way because the system has not ended. So, I mean, like Dave said earlier this evening, it might be a hard thing because you have to detox from the way that we've been trained by the system, but it would be the best thing to get rid of it and start with something new. And it's just for reasons like that, just to say the least, just for reasons like that. I'm thinking, Scotty.
My apologies, yeah. Joe. My apologies.
That was all good.
You ready for the other clip?
Yeah, I want to play the second.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Before we go to come up to modern times, I'd like to get back to the.
I don't know why these clips are so low, man.
In your book, you talk about. You document specific examples of some of the doctors who were involved in these ghoulish experiments. So you mentioned Dr. James Marion Sims and Dr. Walter F. Jones. Can you talk about some of the things that they practiced on slaves in those days?
Right. James Marion Sims was a very important surgeon in Alabama. And his...
Yeah.
Can you play the second one?
That is the second one.
It is? Oh,
yeah, you posted the same video twice.
Oh, man, that's terrible. Okay, give me 1 second. I thought it was... Let me see what... I wonder what the third one is then. It might be the one.
You posted the same one. It's the same one, too.
What the heck? Okay, hold on. This is crazy. Okay, I got it now. No, let me go in there.
Damn it.
Okay. Let me try and put it in there. Yeah, this should
be. You got it, Brother Ross.
Yeah, I just put it in there. Let me go back and take a look at the link, too. So this should be the second one, and then I'll get the third one.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Yeah, that's it right there, Scott.
Okay, and then I'll get the third one. That was crazy.
You see it, Brother Scott?
Yeah, give me a sec.
Sure.
No worries.
Thank you.
To get ready, while Scotty taking care of this at the top of the hour, we're going to start this next conversation. You want to introduce that?
Make a joyful noise unto the Lord.
It's not really my story. It's our story. Because I could not have had it done without you.
I met Virtus in the church choir. He really couldn't carry a tune very well. In fact, sometimes I would look to him and I would sing directly in his ear, and that way that would get him back on pitch.
What was so compelling for me was that here was a man who had never written a book or made a film before because of the love of his friend. became a storyteller, became a filmmaker.
Any memories come to mind?
Oh, very fond of memories. Maybe on a Saturday afternoon, if you find somebody had an old broken down wagon, you take the hook on the yard, hook it, you know, put make a wire and curve it and then roll that hook down the hill or whatever. That's it. That's the only thing.
Roll the hook.
With that wire. That's our toy. There's a black man that found it. Founded Lowell Station.
This is amazing. Lowell Station, the black community, played such an integral part in that whole process of freeing slavery.
Oh, yeah. They called this little community Freedom Village.
We never thought much of segregation. That was normal when we came in, because that's all we knew.
I knew that something was wrong on this particular day. All of a sudden, he began to sob. He was sobbing uncontrollably. And he said to me, as a child, 5 years old, I was experimented on. I was experimented on with radiation.
They had a little round beanie they put on our heads, and then two girls stood behind a lead screen, and they pushed a button, and it seemed like I saw some flashes. And she told the other nurse, "Oh my God, I've given him too much."
Make a joyful noise unto the Lord.
I think any sort of description of what has occurred and what Virtus lives with on a daily basis is nothing short of incredible.
Are you angry?
No. But if you're angry, that means your heart's not right.
Hallelujah! 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 Singing.
It was God's grace that helped me. It kept me here. I think he wanted this to go. I think he wanted to go. To show the magnitude of his message. Because it should be told.
You play that last one, Brother Scotty, that third video, and that'll be it.
Yeah.
While we're waiting for that, Brother Rise, you want to go on and introduce the next topic at the top of the hour?
If you told black people that white people were committing biological genocide against us, and that by the year 2000 whatever there would be no more black people, you would get one reaction. But you're saying that we're being threatened with cultural and psychological extinction. How do you get African people to see the urgency of the situation?
I don't know, frankly, if you can. I think that we have to focus on young African people who have not been so conditioned with a way of thinking that supports European imperialism, European power, that they still have the ability to use their intuition, their spirituality, their Africanness to create, to think beyond the limitations that have been given to them in European academies. I think most of us as adults, as elders, have been so conditioned that we're afraid to move beyond the parameters that have been defined by our enemies in our thinking, so that our vision is limited. And so we are really not the people who should be conceptualizing the plans, you know, the movements, what we should be building. But I focus on the younger people who hopefully are still more in touch with what is natural to African people. And if I can affirm that in them, they will see the urgency. I find that in my teaching. I find that in teaching young people, that once they are affirmed and introduced in a conscious way to the African worldview, it becomes crystal clear to them, and they see in an urgency in us as African people building for self, as opposed to imitating forms which have been put in place to make sure that we continue to be oppressed.
Culturally and psychologically, do you think we realize what we have lost?
No, not... you know, it's ironic because we don't realize it on a conscious level, mm-hmm. yet we live it every day in the way we walk, in the way we talk, in the way in the music we create. There is a depth of spirituality which exists in us as a people. Which has continued since our origins, that our ancestors have passed to us, and which we continue to pass on ourselves, that we don't consciously recognize as a strength. We don't realize that it is something that we need to use to think with, so that when we are presented with a European worldview in the classroom, we think that that's the only way to be. That's the only way to think, because we didn't come with anything. So I don't think that we are aware on a conscious level of what it is that we've moved away from in terms of power. You see, that's what we're not aware of.
Could you talk some about how we came to be who and what we are today? If you understand the question.
I think I do.
Okay.
I think that we have to look back at a period that I call the Ma'afa. We as Africans were very consciously stripped of our culture. Now, that becomes a platitude. You know, everybody's saying that. Stripped of our culture, but we have to see that we had a strong culture and so forth. But nobody seems to realize the depth of what that means. Being stripped of our culture meant being conditioned to accept ourselves as inferior beings. Okay? It meant that we were conditioned to feel that we had to be dependent on Europeans, dependent on white people, that we could not do things for ourselves and in our own image. That conditioning began with a long period of terrorism, which was very physical, you know, physically manifested. At the same time, there was the breaking of the will. So there was cultural violence, I call it, you know, in the book, as well as the physical violence, which was very important. We then came to a period in which we mistakenly thought we were free. We're now at a point where we think that we have freedom, the ability to be whatever it is that we can be within this society and so forth. Yet what happens is that we are still thinking within a modality that has been determined by those who would oppress us, those who would control us. And we don't see beyond that. So the question for me becomes, who controls how you think? We have the ability to create our own structures, our own theories, our own definitions of reality. to look at the African worldview, to look at, for instance, the Dogon people, to look at the Kemetic people, to look at our own people who have, even look at Carter G. Woodson, for instance, the miseducation of the Negro, which I don't think was really ever understood by us, and to use these things as inspirations for the building of institutions, the creation of things, the building our own buildings.
I should have mentioned this, Scotty. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was saying is we got to go to this station identification. You are listening to Real Life with me, myself, Jenna, and Brother Roz on Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right with you in just a few.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
My fault, I had muted myself. Thank you, Brother Scotty.
Yes.
If you have any questions or comments, by all means, give us a call. That number is... My apologies. I couldn't even get to it. Sorry. That number is 704-802-5056. That number again is 704-802-5056. Press star if you would have a question or comment, and we'll be with you in just a few. You made some points there, Brother Scotty, and just to address some of those, it is a right wing talking point, but it's also some of the stuff that we find ourselves doing, and we hear this all the time.
I don't think the listening audience knows what you're talking about, Jenna. You got to remember, they're not in the chat.
Well, yes, my apologies. As a matter of fact, go ahead, and you can state that.
Yeah, I just noticed the similarities between some black people and racist whites when they start talking about dependency on the system. As if white people ain't dependent on the system. And when I say system in the context of that video, I'm talking about Europeans. That's what we understand it in this system here behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. That's who represent. Uh-huh. That's who we see as being representative of the government. But like Otis was just pointing out, I mean, since Reconstruction, the number of black people who are part of the governmental system, man, it's pretty large. It's pretty large. So I have to say the system is us as well as them. It's all of us that's behind
you. Yeah, that's the point I was finna get to, too, Scott. Yeah. Was you finna say something, Roz?
Yeah, I was going to say, because really what I was really gearing towards, because I knew that particular aspect of the conversation might have took it off course, because it was really about what she said about the children and about them being the ones that are much have the ability to be raised in a manner where they can be less impacted psychologically by the system if they get the right upbringing in order to have the proper perspective regardless of where they may end up. And if we can get enough of them understanding the system in its proper context and get them the proper logic to navigate that system and facilitate thought processes towards coming up with a solution to the problem. That was really what my intended purpose was for that video, not all of the other stuff. It was really what she said about the children and the importance of where they are versus, like she said, the elders. In regards to some of the mentalities that some of the elders have that may not be conducive to solving the problems versus the young people who, in every revolution, it's the young people that make it happen, but they have to be groomed in the right way to focus their energy towards the right thing in order to facilitate that revolution, however it may manifest itself.
Yeah, I agree. But just to answer some of those questions, when she was talking about us being dependent, you know, you said that at the end, Scotty. Excuse me, my apologies. You said that at the end of your statement is that it's all of us that's perpetuating this. We need them. We find some of our own family, friends, and just people that we meet randomly. They also believe this too. When they provide everything for themselves, whether they go to work, they hustle, whatever they do for income, they provide for themselves. But if we're talking about separating, we can't do that. We can't live without them. What about my Facebook? What about my cell phone coverage? What about the internet? You know, all of these things pop up. So we also feel that we need the system. And I think what she was, well, I don't think, what I got from what she was saying is that we have to start a whole new mentality with the children, like Ross was saying, because they are the ones that's going to be putting a lot of these ideas that we're trying to formulate and how we're going to enact these particular cures to all of these problems that we have. They will be the ones to have to initiate that.
Here's the thing about the children. All right, my mom raised me to be a certain kind of way, okay, to practice justice, for a lack of a better word. She wasn't using that term, but that's what she was teaching me to do, to practice justice, to treat people the way that I would have them treat me. But... you know, you can raise a child, man, but at the end of the day, you know, I did not embody everything that my mom was trying to instill in me, man. And I was out there doing the complete opposite. And it took, I guess, until my 30s before I started figuring out that what I'm doing ain't right. I need to practice justice and what have you. So, I mean, yeah, you can mold a child and whatnot, but at the end of the day, that child is still, when they come into their own mind, are still going to make their own decisions.
They make the choices.
Yeah, they're going to make their own choices. So that's my thing on the children. Now, I have a question. When you say separate, what are we talking about when we say separate from them? Let me give you the example. I live in a county that's 80% white. The dude across, two dudes across the street is white. About 100 yards in either direction is trailer parks full of whites. Now, we don't commune with them or anything. Now, the dude across the street, he's a farmer. And cause he got some white guilt on his mind, knowing that he on stolen land, he pays tribute to our family by the way of food, what he grows on that stolen land and what have you. I mean, but we're mentally, we are separated from them. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So are we talking about a mental separation or a physical separation?
When I said separate from the system, that's what I said. I didn't say separate from them. And this is what I was using an example as far as people who are still attached to what white people do. Let's say, for instance, clothing, like I stated, the computer, just the system itself, in order to either start it over, stop it, change it, we have to quit using the initial system that at hand first. So I was saying separating from that particular system, similar to now I don't say that we just quit doing everything that we're doing. I mean, that'd be catastrophic for you as a person and your family. But similar to what Dave be talking about on Tando, if our end game is to divest from the system in general, you know, we have to figure out how those things come about So when we pass all of the knowledge of how we're going to do it, I mean, because we'll never be completely ready, but everything that's going to happen, whether we're talking about prepping, maybe not for a disaster or a war, but to divest from the system, getting all of these things saved up, those children are going to be the ones that's going to be enacting the plan that we're putting forth right now. That's what I was saying. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. But is that possible? What I'm saying, this
is it logical?
Yeah,
I understand.
Yeah, what I'm saying is, for example, when I hear people say separate from the system, and Dave talked about some of this. Now, there are legal means that you can limit your tax liability, okay? But most of us, I don't know. I am not even going to put a try to quantify it with a number. But a lot of people are not able to do those sort of things, so they continue to pay into the system. Even if we limit our tax liability, right, when we purchase the things that we need, whether that's fuel, whether that's certain goods and products, we're still paying into the system. When I hear people talking about divest from the system, I mean, does that mean my mom should give up her Social Security checks? You know, because that's her money. You know what I'm saying? That she paid into,
right,
all her life. So when I hear this conversation, not this one in particular, but just in general, it's a lot of vagueness. I'm not hearing,
yes,
it's just very, very vague, man. And I'm left, well, see, you know, with a lot of questions.
This is where that all of that gets clear. Like I said, it wouldn't be us, because for the same reasons that you're mentioning, we have no way of working that type of stuff out. So when we dealing with the children, once again, because that's what it's going to continue to go back to. Reason why I started even doing this show, for all of the stuff that I felt like after I found it out, I know that that's something that I should have been living by. I should have known about it. That's why I started the show. Same way what I was taking from her is that we have to start putting this into our children. Even though your mother taught you to be about justice, no, you didn't do it always. You were still experimenting as a child, teenager, young adult. It was interesting that you put that number 30 out there, because we know that our brain doesn't mature to a full adult at 25. So that's 5 years later. You understood what she was telling you back then. A lot of us are not even getting that anymore. Think about all of the single parent houses where the mother is always out to work. More times than not, the father is not there. It's not always the case, but that's just the reality that we have to deal with. They don't have time to put this into the children no more. My generation being one of those. Not saying that my mama didn't do any of that, but I do know people who parents didn't have time for that to happen. So we, from what I'm getting, once again, from her, what I feel from it, is that we have to start back doing this. Because you had mentioned in the thread that how can you get something back that you never knew you had? Well, that's where we come in, being the parents, is teaching them those things that we didn't learn. That way they can grow up with that mindset from the get-go.
Yeah,
one of the things that I'm trying to do with my children. Go ahead, Brother Scott.
Yeah, I was talking about something different in reference to the video that she was talking about, and I can't recall it right now. But I have thought of a way that I have gotten my children to divest from the system. Now, my mom is in agreement with me now because she didn't see it that way back then. She was very proud when I graduated from basic training and graduated from advanced training. She was very proud of my military service. Even had you know, paid some good money to have a portrait made of me and her with me in my little uniform and whatnot. But, you know, last week she was saying, you know, I would never join this United States military, and nobody should be joining the military. And I had never heard her talk like that before. Now, she know I had told my daughters, no, my daughter, one of them was talking about going in the Air Force. I was like, no, baby girl, you don't want to go in the Air Force or any military service, not out because of what they're doing isn't right. And you know, all the social political ramifications of what the U.S. military is actually doing. But I said, they'll also harm you in there. They'll rape you in there, whether you're a man or a woman. Okay, you'll get raped in there. So I look at that as a way that my family has divested from the system and ensuring no future generations going to U.S. military. That's just one example.
Yo, Brother Scotty, that's why we had these conversations. That is one of the ways, you know. And as we think about it in this manner, those different scenarios will pop up to where somebody will find another way to divest from the system. You know, it's gonna take some time because it's been people talking about it, but ain't nobody done anything. And I'm not saying as far as no revolts or abolitionism or any of that. I mean, as far as like just putting to work some of these ideas that's being thrown out there. They just get tossed up and then in the wind, somebody pop up with them later. But with the children, like you said, how you did with your daughters? You taught them about that and make sure that nobody else in the Reed genes contribute to that. Now, if all of us done that with our children, that means none of our generations will be investing in that part of the system. And it's always something else that could be added on.
I was going to say that's what I did with my son, and that's what my father did with me. He told me when he first came to this country, that was one of the first things he wanted to do was join the military. But he had a couple of physical ailments that prevented him from joining. And then it was after that, when he was in college, he met Kwame Ture, and that just changed the entire trajectory of my family. And, you know, he made sure to tell me that, too. Like, nope, you can't join the military for a country that will kill you just for being a young black male. Like you can't go and risk your life for a country and come home to that. So, nope, that's a no-no right there. And I ended up telling my son the same thing. You know, he went to school, and it's funny because he saw how his grandfather was mistreated in the medical system, and that's what made him want to get his degree in speech and hearing sciences that he's, you know, graduating on Thursday with, and then he'll be going to graduate school. And because it's a medical, thanks, my brother, and because it's the medical field, he has to get that training. So he knows what he's doing, but, you know, one of his main things is to help elderly black people and young black people who might have speech and hearing impediments and need that assistance. And he's literally the only black male in that field in his school. The vast majority of people who graduate tend to be white and female. So, you know, he's literally in his school the only black male. And he has the highest grades in the school. He's graduating summa cum laude. So, I mean, he put in that time. And, you know, he's been in school since he was 2 years old. So it's a long time coming. I mean, like, straight, never stopped. Every, you know, minus his little summer vacations, he was in school. And a lot of times he didn't have summer vacations. He was in a special program throughout most of his late elementary into junior high school years. He was in a special program where on holidays and weekends he had to be doing academic work. So he didn't have the, you know, average childhood of you know, most children who are in the school system. And then we educated him at home. We had like about three different readings done by Yoruba priests and Baba Lyles, who, you know, basically put it in our heads to understand that the main way not to lose him to them was to make sure that we continue to instill in him all of the values and all of the knowledge of himself that we instilled when he was a child. We just doubled up on all of that. And now that he's an adult, he's come back and said, thank you. You know, he said, if you guys didn't support me like you did, and if you guys didn't give me the foundation in our ancestors, you know, he wouldn't have been who he is. And that's the greatest gift in anything, to have your child tell you that. So, you know, it does work. You know, it's just about putting in the time, and it's a lot of time and effort. But once you put it in, the results are just incredible. So, you know, I just, everything that we're talking about with the children be more accurate. And like Scotty said, every child, you know, they're their own person once they become a young adult. But one thing I've learned is that whatever you instill in a child at a young age, when stuff gets critical, they only go back to what they know. So if what you've put in them at the core is good, then usually they'll return to that. If what they've gotten is negative, then what they'll turn to is that, because that's at the core is what they remember. And all children go back to what they know. So do your best to put the best of you in them so that when they do get to those critical situations where they have to make important decisions, they know the proper context and understand the system they're in, so they make decisions that are most conducive to their survival and their mental health. That's my opinion.
I have to also acknowledge, though, part of my issue was is that I was raised in the streets too. Okay, mm-hmm. We had a nice home. I wasn't like we was in poverty. My mom did a good job hiding it because I can't remember wanting for anything and never going to bed hungry. But at the same, and I wasn't like in no, you know, stereotypical ghetto. I was in a, when I lived in Detroit, in a middle class African American neighborhood, man. But still, that street life was there. So I guess, you know, when you come up in those environments, because you want to fit in as a child, you know, you don't, it just has its ways of pressuring you into doing things counter to what your parents tell you. And it's just a competing narrative, man. So I didn't give up that street life until I was in my 30s. Not saying I was out there robbing, killing people, but I was doing what was considered, well, I'll just say crimes of survival.
I understand.
Yes. I ended up stopping in my early 20s. Oh, my apologies. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was saying I stopped in my early 20s when my son was born. That was the main catalyst for me to start really thinking. And even when I was running the street, like everybody who did the crimes and the dirt that I did, and we were all, there was a mad mob of us. So they were all the smartest children in the school. They weren't misfits or anything like that. These were the smartest children in the school. But that when you apply that intelligence to criminal activity, I mean, it's just incredible the things you can, you know, situations you put yourself into and the things you can get away with when you start to outthink the authorities in certain ways. And that's the way we used to function back then. We were just really young. And the things that we got away with, Jenna and I talked about that, I think, earlier today or yesterday. You know, the stuff we used to get away with back in those days, you can't even think of trying to get away with now. And it's just incredible sometimes when you think of just the dumb things that we do. And a lot of time, you know, we could have conversations about, you know, Black history and all kinds of stuff, and then still go right out there and rob whole trains full of people. Like, it was crazy. So it was, you know, I understand exactly what you mean, because I come from that same background. The difference was I was just being put out at a young age, and it just started to take its toll. And, you know, like you said, crimes of survival. You got to do what you got to do. And that's pretty much the position I was in. And by the time my wife, at the time she was my girlfriend, and told me she was pregnant, and I said, okay, well, I got to, you know, find something long-term to do with my life here, because now I have another life to care for. And that was the catalyst for me really, really changing. And it took my son a long time to really learn about any of those things about me. And, it's just him coming with me to my own neighborhood where he really got to meet people who knew me. And then they would say certain things. I didn't say anything. I was just there visiting and whatnot. And he would just hear things and was like, wow, okay, Dad, we got to talk. Like, it would be like that. And I was like, oh, it's okay, you know. And we would just have a conversation about those things. And from there, he was able to not embody those things. He understood that those were errors that I made. But he learned about that stuff when I was older, you know, and it didn't have a detrimental effect on him because he was already, you know, waist deep in the life that he's living. So it was never something I had to worry about in that regard. So I'm thankful, man. That's all I could say.
Yes, congratulations on the graduation. Also, throw that out there one more time.
Thank you.
That's who we'll be hearing on the intro too, yeah. By the way. But we are right here at the
we got the
bottom half of the hour. So real quick, let me just you are listening to Real Life the Radio Show on Foundational Radio Network, brought to you by Black Talk Radio. If you have a question or comment or just want to add into the conversation, by all means, give us a call. That number is 704-802-5056. That number again is 704-802-5056. Press ** so you can be heard. We'll get with you as soon as possible. I was speaking a little bit about why we do this. Letting these children know, and adults also, just letting them know a little bit about their history, because a lot of the stuff that we found out growing up as young children, depending on who you were attached to, me myself, nobody knew anything about this. And I just think about some of the stuff of what I made certain decisions, whether it was wild and crazy or just subtle decisions, if I knew what our people had done back in time outside of just always being whipped. And I know a lot of people don't never even pay attention to that, but that weighs a lot on your mind. And when you know that it's great things that have come from your lineage, just to know that as a young child, I know it has to be different, because I felt different once I started feeling them, once I started learning about it as an adult. So I know it has a great impact. And that's the reason why we try to bring you these constructive shows every night. That's mine. Brother Rise, before we get into any of the other stuff, you want to go ahead on and explain yourself?
Well, for me, this is something that I was told to do by a lot of really important people to me, and these are all my teachers. And basically, they always said that every one of us should teach someone else. You know, once you learn something new and you vet it to make sure it's true, then, you know, or expand on that in some way, then you take that information and pass it on to as many people that our people that would listen. And that's something that, that's really what took me away from making music, because that's really the background that I came from, and it was music that balanced off the criminal activity. So that's what really saved my life until my son was on the way and my wife and I met each other. So to say that that was something I loved to do would be an understatement. You know, so what I understood was that music wasn't what I was meant to do. I was meant to be doing what I'm doing now. And the more that I put work towards helping my people in some form of capacity, or passing on information to them in some form of capacity, the more gratification I got from it, because, you know, those people would tell me that I helped them in some way. And that's what I do it for. You know, I don't do it for anything else. It's just love of my people, and that's something my son grew up with. That's something I taught him since, you know, before he could walk. And now he's the living embodiment of all of those teachings, and he has a lot more to learn from me. You know, college takes up a lot of his time and energy, so I told him, I said, the real education starts after graduation. What you learn beyond the halls of the institutions for so-called education is way more important than what you learn in those halls. And me being an autodidact is something I learned from those people, and ultimately it has served me quite well. So, you know, like I said, my son is looking forward to that too. But ultimately, that's what I do it for, to help my people. I love our people, and that's what I was charged to do by my elders, who are now ancestors, and that includes family members too. So, hey, it's what I gotta do, pretty much. That's what I've been charged to do.
And why is it so important that we have the most accurate information possible?
Well, that's because lack of knowledge is a mental illness, and mental illnesses can lead to death. When you don't understand the world that you live in, and how it functions, and you make decisions that to you seem logical and sensible, but are actually idiosyncratic in the context of the system you live in, then that can be your life. And the thing about it is that we don't always get second chances. The people who we read about in the news or see videos of on the news are the people who didn't get a second chance. The ones who get the second chance might spend the majority of their lives in jail fighting the crime that they didn't commit, and then they get their second chance. Some of them escape, you know, imprisonment like I did. You know, it was just honestly, I know it was the ancestors that guided me, that kept me from really getting caught up. And I had a couple of serious close calls between losing my life and going to jail. But it was, I know that there was divine intervention in certain situations that happened to me that kept me from having to deal with the system in that capacity. And I had a real destructive mentality. So I had a different the concept of the way my life was going to go if I had ever gotten arrested. And I made a pact that I was going to be the worst human being possible if I ended up going to jail. That's pretty much what I was planning to do. And it just so happened that that didn't happen. And I wasn't meant to be that person, because I know I probably wouldn't be around to be talking to anybody at this point. So ultimately, you know, that's why I'm here. I know for a fact these things are things that were ordained by my ancestors. So they're the ones who, a lot of us don't understand that, but if you get into traditional spirituality, your ancestors really dictate and guide a lot of what you go through in life. And you know, just from my own personal experience, the closer bond you have with them, the more you find that, you know, things happen to you in ways that it doesn't happen for a lot of people. And my family's experienced quite a few things that would be considered miraculous. But ultimately, we know, because my wife started off as a Christian, and I met her away from that tradition, and just, you know, we just build on things. I never tried to steer her in any direction, but she just gravitated towards traditional African spirituality. And when she started to see the efficacy of it and the power of how it functioned, and she got to see those ancestors make themselves, their abilities and their love for us, make it really tangible by bringing things from the unseen world to the seen world, I didn't have to say anything. It spoke for itself. And she, you know, she made that transition herself. My son grew up like that. And he grew up knowing the Bible inside out, but we use the African Heritage Study Bible. So he was able to see himself in that book and understand, you know, where those characters came from. But then eventually he transitioned on his own too. We didn't put anything on him. We showed him. And like Dr. Mbani said, once you show a child and they see it for themselves, they'll make the move themselves. You don't have to, you know, propagandize them. Just show them. Show them the truth and let them see it for themselves. And everything else will just flow the way it's supposed to, because children are nothing but little adults. So that's pretty much how it went down.
Yes, they are. You talk to them like that and they respond in that manner.
Yes, sir.
Well, do I know what you're talking about? We're going to get a little bit... speaking of accurate information, mm-hmm. We had those articles up about sonar. And mm-hmm. what the sonar has done is that it has located a landmass. It located a landmass, a continent, well, not a whole continent, but a large plot of land did sink. But it's not called Mu.
Mm-hmm.
It is called Zieria. Did I say that right?
Zealandia. It's the remnants of that continent is the country of New Zealand. So the rest of what was that continent is now underwater, and the highest points on what was that continent is now the country of New Zealand. So that is the lost continent. It's in the not too far from Australia in the Indian Ocean. It's not in the Pacific. It was never a continent in the Pacific Ocean. All of the islands in the Pacific were created by volcanic activity, like what we're seeing on Kilauea right now. The volcanoes erupt, it spews lava. The lava adds to the land that's there, and as it cools, it becomes the most fertile, rich soil you can possibly imagine being volcanic soil, and it expands the island. If those islands are not a continent at all or connected to a continent, they were created by volcanoes. So yeah, you're absolutely correct.
Man, you explained it so well. then we go, we jump from there with that. We brought that up because, like I said, sonar technology found that landmass. Mm-hmm. No landmass in the Pacific. Therefore, we have a few articles on the Omex to where we show that they were Africans that journeyed over there. Let me get to these because they had in front of me. So many of them in here.
Oh yeah, we had a few.
Can't find all of them. Give me a minute here, please. My apologies. I thought I had it pulled up, but that was the wrong article. Okay, Omex syllable. Omex civilization. Okay, and this comes from Ancient History Encyclopedia. Let me just go down a few references for this.
I think the one that you was probably looking at is the Global Research one.
Yeah, because I'm not
seeing a little further down. A little bit.
That's horrible. I should have been had that. If you can click onto it and pull it up, that'd be great.
Sure, I'm gonna pull it up right now. Give me a second. It's opening up. So it shouldn't be but a second.
Yeah, because I can't find it. My apologies.
All right, there we go. So this is Before Columbus, How Africans Brought Civilization to the Americas by Delakai Chengu. And this is from the globalresearch.ca. And this is from 2014. So on Monday, October 13, 2014, America's government offices, business, and banks all grind to a halt in order to commemorate Columbus Day in schools up and down the country. Little children are taught that a heroic Italian explorer discovered America, and various events and parades are held to celebrate the occasion. It has now become common knowledge amongst academics that Christopher Columbus clearly did not discover America, at least because it is impossible to discover a people in a continent that was already there and thriving with culture. One can only wonder how Columbus could have discovered America when people were watching him from America's shores. Contrary to popular belief, African American history did not start with slavery in the New World. An overwhelming body of new evidence is emerging, which proves that Africans had frequently sailed across the Atlantic to the Americas thousands of years before Columbus and indeed before Christ. The great ancient civilizations of Egypt and West Africa traveled to the Americas, contributing immensely to early American civilization by importing the art of pyramid building, political systems, and religious practices, as well as mathematics, writing, and a sophisticated calendar. The strongest evidence of African presence in America before Columbus comes from the pen of Columbus himself. In 1920, a renowned American historian and linguist, Leo Weiner of Harvard University, in his book Africa and the Discovery of America, explained how Columbus noted in his journal that Native Americans had confirmed that black-skinned people had come from the southeast in boats trading in gold-tipped spears, unquote. One of the first documented instances of African sailing and settling the Americas were the black Egyptians led by King Ramses III during the 19th dynasty in 1292 BC. In fact, in 445 BC, the Greek historian Herodotus wrote of the ancient Egyptian pharaohs' great seafaring and navigational skills. Further concrete evidence noted by Dr. Imhotep and largely ignored by Eurocentric archaeologists include Egyptian artifacts found in North America from the Algonquin writings on the East Coast to the artifacts and Egyptian place names in the Grand Canyon, unquote. In 1311 AD, another major wave of African exploration to the New World was led by King Abubakar II, the ruler of the 14th century Mali Empire, which was larger than the Holy Roman Empire. The king sent out 200 ships of men and 200 ships of trade material, crops, animals, cloth, and crucially, African knowledge of the astronomy, religion, and the arts. African explorers crossing the Atlantic waters in primitive boats may seem unlikely or perhaps far-fetched to some. Such incredible nautical achievements are not as daunting as they may seem, given that numerous successful modern attempts have illustrated that without an oar, rudder, or sail, ancient African boats, including the quote-unquote dugout, would have certainly been able to cross the vast ocean in a matter of weeks. As time allows us to drift further and further away from the European age of exploration, quote-unquote, and we moved beyond the age of racial intellectual prejudice, historians are beginning to recognize that Africans were skilled navigators long before Europeans, contrary to popular belief. Of course, some Western historians continue to refute this fact because, consciously or unconsciously, they are still hanging on to deep 19th century notion that seafaring was a European monopoly. After all, history will tell you that seafaring is quintessential European achievement, the single endeavor of which Europeans are awfully proud. Seafaring allows Europe to conquer the world. The notion that black Africans traveled the roaring waters of the Atlantic Ocean and beat Europeans to the New World threatens a historically white sense of ownership over the seas. When most people think about ancient Mexico, the first civilizations that come to mind are the Incas, Aztec, and Maya. However, during the 1940s, archaeologists discovered a civilization known as the Olmecs of 1200 BC, which predated any other advanced civilization in the Americas. The Olmec civilization, which was of African origin and dominated by Africans, was the first significant civilization in Mesoamerica and the mother culture of Mexico. Olmecs are perhaps best known for the carved colossal heads found in central Mexico that exhibit an unmistakably African Negroid appearance. Ancient African historian Professor Van Sertima has illustrated how Olmecs were the first Mesoamerican civilization to use a written language, sophisticated astronomy, arts, and mathematics, and that they built the first cities in Mexico, all of which greatly influenced the Mayans and subsequent civilizations in the Americas. Quote, there is not a single slightest doubt that all other later civilizations in Mexico and Central America ultimately rest on an Olmec base, unquote, once remarked Michael Coe, a leading historian on Mexico. Africans clearly played an intricate role in the Olmec Empire's rise, and that of African influence peaked during the same period that black Egyptian culture ascended in Africa. A clear indicator of pre-Columbus African transatlantic travel is the recent archaeological findings of narcotics native to America and ancient Egyptian mummies, which have astounded contemporary historians. German toxicologist Baba Nova reported findings of cocaine and nicotine in ancient Egyptian mummies. These substances are known to only be derived from American plants. South American cocaine from erythrooxylin coca and nicotine from nicotiana tabacum. Such compounds could only have been introduced into the ancient Egyptian culture through trade with the Americas. Similarities across early American and African religions also indicate significant cross-cultural contact. The Mayans, Aztecs, and Incas all worship black gods, and the surviving portraits of the black deities are revealing. For instance, ancient portraits of Quetzalcoatl, a Messiah serpent god of Ekuaha, a god of war, are unquestionably Negro with dark skin and woolly hair. Why would Native Americans venerate images so unmistakably African if they had never seen them before? Numerous wall paintings in the caves of Juxlahuaca depict the famous ancient Egyptian opening of the mouth and cross libation rituals. All religious similarities are too large to occur far too often to be mere coincidences. Professor Everett Borders notes, another very important indication of African presence, which is the nature of early American pyramids. Pyramid construction is highly specialized. Ancient Egypt, progressed from the original step pyramid in Xoser to the more sophisticated finished product at Giza. However, at La Venta, Mexico, the Olmecs made a fully finished pyramid with no signs of progressive learning. Olmecan and Egyptian pyramids were both placed on the same north-south axis and had strikingly similar construction methods. Tellingly, all of these pyramids also served the same dual purpose as tomb and temple. Ancient transatlantic similarities in botany, religion, and pyramid building constitute but a fraction of the signs of African influence in ancient America. Other indicators include astronomy, art, writing systems, flora, and fauna. Historically, African people have been exceptional explorers and purveyors of culture across the world. Throughout all of these travels, African explorers have not had a history of starting devastating wars on the people they met. The greatest threat towards Africa having a glorious future is her people's ignorance of Africa's glorious past. Pre-Columbian civilizations in the Americas had its foundation built by Africa.
We can barely hear you.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yeah, it's much better. Thank you very much.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. Pre-Columbian civilization in the Americas had its foundation built by Africans and developed by the ingenuity of Native Americans. Sadly, America in post-Columbus times was founded on the genocide of the indigenous Americans, built on the backs of African slaves, and continues to be run on the exploitation of workers at home and abroad. Clearly, Africans have helped civilize America well before Europeans quote-unquote discovered America, and well before Europeans claimed to have civilized Africa. The growing body of evidence is now becoming simply too loud to ignore. It is about time education policymakers re-examine their school's curriculum to adjust for America's long pre-Columbus history. And that's the end of it.
Brother Ross,
yes, sir.
I'm so glad you read that. I was not going to do that, but it was a great piece to hear. And you can find that same article if you want to go back over it in real life, the page on BTR Community. Brother Rio, did you want to add something?
No, I mean, the information speaks for itself. All we can do is keep digging. I mean, facts is facts.
There's some great videos in the thread too for tonight's show, where you have Dr. Winters, who is an indigenous American historian. I believe he's from the Mississippi area, and he details, there's a video there where he talks about the mound builders and the fact that those were people from Mali who came with the Bubakari, and that they left artifacts with their language telling you where they came from. And he breaks all of that down in his, because he has a book, he's written quite a few books, but there's a book he wrote specifically about American history that's just like off the chain. And there's another video here that I put in there by him as well that discusses the 21 different facts that prove Africans were in America before Mongoloids, and then another one about the Olmec calendar, which he takes you back to West Africa where the long count calendar originated, and gives you the details regarding that coming from West Africa and I believe, if I remember correctly, the people of Mali as well. Because the vast majority of the foundational culture came from Mali, and he was able to decipher the Olmec script using the Mande script, and they tell of their origins in Africa in the fifth stela of Itzla. They actually document their travel from Africa to Central America. The Olmec did in their own language. So I believe video is also in the thread too.
Yes, you put several, and I put several. Let me we here at the 10-minute mark.
Oh,
man, yeah. These 2 hours have flown. I just want to say this real quick, and then I'm gonna hand it back over to you. The reason this is important is because there is a large divide going on amongst us right now. Based off of this information, some people have the real information, some people have some false information. More times than not, popularity is what's pushing the narrative. So depending on who's more popular, people are believing that ideology. And just to be frank, we know most people who hear these radio shows do not go and dig up all of this information. Let's just be real about that. So the correct information has to be presented, because you will get somebody hurt. So we put a bunch of that information into the thread, and Brother Rice, you can go ahead on and do what you do, man.
No problem. It's just the information is there. You know, my people who are Black Caribs are direct descendants of these people. And the question of them having African origins is almost laughable, because that's just what it is. It's nothing other than when cultures meet, they cross assimilate. And there's things that Africans brought back from America, a lot of botany, flora, and fauna as well. But there's also cultural things. And it's just essentially, like they said, the Africans brought this stuff, and indigenous people here developed it and made it even greater. And that's pretty much what it is. And like they said, where Africans went, they never got into wars with people. You know, whenever they came, it was peaceful, pretty much. You can find it was peaceful, except for probably some certain aspects of Egyptian history when Thutmose the Third was expanding the empire. That was a very brutal time because he was expanding the empire. But I mean, for the most part of African history, they didn't come and force anybody to worship their gods or anything. Usually it was that those other groups saw what they had, found it valuable, and decided to incorporate it. Even when the Romans came into Egypt and took over Egypt, they wanted to be Egyptians. They wanted to be classified as gods. Their so-called Roman kings wanted to be classified as gods, like in Africa. They had to marry Ethiopian wives, like the black kings had to do, in order to, you know, have legitimate ownership of the throne as the king. The lineage was matrilineal. So I mean, all of that stuff is just things that that you find in our history that's really a powerful omen to show that our people bought civilization. Even when the Moors went to Europe, they went to Europe and took a lot of the information from the Nile, because they had translated the documents before the white people did, and they were able to expand on that knowledge and bring it to Europe and create the first universities and the first bath houses and all kinds of notable universities. And also you had all three religions, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, everybody practicing their own religion with no persecution, no terrorism, no bombs blowing up churches and crazy stuff like that. Everybody was living peaceful. It's when the white folks wanted to take everything back, you know, they left in 1492, and, you know, we see what's going on in Europe now, so it should give us pause for thought. So that's pretty much what it is. But we'll probably talk more about this down the road, because I think it's just really great to get into some of this stuff, because it's fascinating, number one. And number two, like I said, they told you who they were. I mean, in that particular stellar, they tell us their origins in Africa and that they came over here. The Abubakar is documented. They were all over southwestern America, all over the Mississippi Valley. That's where those people who came with Abubakar went, as well as Central America. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to build on some of this some more. So let's get ready to get up out of here. I know it's almost time. Was there anything you wanted to say before we wrap it up, Jenna?
Yo, you cleaned it up pretty good, man. No need for me to add anything. I would just water it down. So if nobody else has any questions or comments, you can hit us with the prayer and take us on out of here.
All right, man. We're going to get into the prayer now, then. And thanks to Gus for this prayer, because it's a prayer we say in my family regularly, because we remind ourselves of the same thing. So let's do it. Creator, we ask that you help us to remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us to remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time that we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Let's replace white supremacy with justice ASAP. I am in love of the all, and all love is in me. I am a part of the all, and the all is a part of me. I am one with the all, and the all is one with me. I can succeed as a part of the all and fail as an individual. I can be all that I wish in the all, as long as my wish is to stay in the all. I am never alone. The all is, I am. The all can, I can. The all does, I do. Thanks again for being with us this evening, the 15th of May, 2018. We will see you again next week. Peace and love to you all.
Yes, thank you for joining us tonight. Good night. Peace and love. Brother Scotty, you hang it up for us.